Raising the Bets is brought to you by the StarQuest Production Network and is made possible by our many generous patrons. If you'd like to support the podcast, please visit sqpn.com/give. You're listening to Raising the Bets, a family podcast of pirates and penguins. We're a Catholic couple raising five kids outside of Boston. Join us as we share in the joys and challenges of marriage, homeschool, and our adventures near and far as we make sense of the world and experience the best parts of our culture. I'm Dom Bettinelli.
And I'm Melanie Bettinelli.
So I want to start out with a little bit of feedback from a listener. We got some listener feedback. I think this was from YouTube. And this was on our episode 10. So this goes back a ways. This goes back to August of 2019. And the episode was, but the feedback is from this week. So just not that I just found old feedback.
a listener is listening through the archives.
Yes. In fact, this is from listener Christy, who wrote, I agree, Melanie. And she'll explain what she agrees with.
Okay.
Because I don't expect to remember.
A year ago, I do not remember.
My favorite books to movies never works out for me. So we were apparently talking about movies that were made out of books we love. Probably The Hobbit. We were probably talking about The Hobbit.
Probably.
She says, I too love the details, and that never seems to translate well onto the big screen. Actually, mm-hmm. Even books to television shows are a struggle. Actually, I want to interject and say, I think that's even worse sometimes. Maybe. Well, the thing with TV is you have more time.
You have more time, so sometimes you can get more details.
Yes, although Game of Thrones, I never read the books, but from what I hear, it was way off by the end. Yeah, right. Too many details.
But like Dickens, I think, works better as like a miniseries than like a television show.
Mm.
Anyway, go ahead.
Well, The Expanse is another one that went from books to TV, which has been... I think the TV is really good, but again, you still have to lose a lot of the details. All right. I will continue. Christy says, I discovered this podcast through Mysterious World and am starting from the beginning. God bless you. It has been fantastic thus far. Thank you both for sharing bits and pieces of your lives with us. It has been a nice, wholesome podcast to listen to on my way to work.
Oh, thank you very much, Christy.
I don't know that I've ever been described as nice and wholesome. Well, the podcast has been described that way. I have not yet been described as nice and wholesome, but thank you, Christy. This is one of the reasons why StarQuest is a network, because it gives an opportunity for us to have not just one show, but many shows. And so you get an entry into one show and you say, oh, what about these other shows? And you get exposed to the other things that we do, and it creates this communal aspect, because really that's what we're trying to build. It's not just a network. We're trying to build a community. And in fact, SQPN has been a community for more than a decade, long ago, long before I was making podcasts with SQPN. It was a community. And so it's so gratifying to hear that that continues. I am glad all power to you for going back and starting at the beginning and listening through to today, the present. If you're listening one at a time, hopefully more than one a week, but that you'll eventually catch up. How many? Let's see, we're on episode 68. So you've probably got another 50 some odd episodes to go by this point.
So, that's a lot of episodes.
Yes.
Wow.
That's a couple months worth. If you listen to one a day on the way to work, that's 5 days a week, 10 weeks. Yeah. And you're probably not even doing that. I don't know that I could stand listening to me 5 days a week, but thank you, Christy, for your feedback. We really appreciate it.
Indeed. Yes. Thank you.
So let's move on to talk about what we've been doing this week. So we had a lot of doctor's appointments and other things going on this week.
Oh, my goodness. Lots of doctor's appointments.
Which means lots of phone calls. No, we don't. We the kids don't yet have much in the way of in-person appointments. We've had a few, but not a lot.
Yeah, but we've got flu shots coming up soon. But
flu shots. I already had mine. And then I saw in the paper today, if you haven't got your flu shot yet, you might want to wait. Thanks. Great.
You might want to wait.
Yeah, I didn't read it because there would be no point for me to read it now because I've got it. And so who knows? Bye. It's probably fine. Anyway, but yes, flu shots coming up. But we did get two things in this week, both scouting related, because Scouts is back on again, mostly. you took Lucy on Friday afternoon to her den meeting, which was at
Nitla Farm.
Is it Nitla?
It is definitely Nitla. We've been passing this sign, which is like right around the corner from our house, for
12 years.
And I did not know how to pronounce it, but yes, we met Mrs. Nitla and some of her children, and she's very lovely, and it's a great farm.
Well, it's funny because I've always thought, like, I've heard that they do pumpkin, they have a pumpkin patch and they have hay rides. And I'm like, are we really missing us on something that's like literally next to our neighborhood?
Yes.
We have been.
They had chickens and goats and rabbits and a pig and a big pumpkin field. Mrs. Nitla said that they plant 6,000 pumpkin seeds. She and her husband and children. She said the kids all help. And there were several of them in evidence running things and moving things and helping out. So they have a big pumpkin patch. They had a small corn patch and a bunch of animals.
Well, they have that. I think they're the ones that have that farm, that little farm stand outside the post office.
I don't know if that's them, but maybe.
Yeah, over the summer, it's like an honor system farm stand. Like,
there's another farm on the other side of the post office.
There's actually, I mean, where we live used to all be farms. Like,
right.
Our
house used to be farmland.
Yeah. So there are several farms in the town.
Yeah. So, it was fun. I mean, it's not a huge place. And the hay ride was sort of like a loop around the cornfield and along one side of the pumpkin patch and back.
And Lucy said there was no hay.
It was a wagon that had once held hay, and there were bits and pieces of hay. But Lucy was disappointed by the fact that
there was no actual
hay in the hay ride. Yeah, it was kind of a wagon ride.
Uh-huh.
But nonetheless, she picked a pumpkin out. And it was a good 20 pounder.
The thing is nearly as big as she is.
Yes. And we learned about how pumpkins grow, and we looked at some animals. And
then you came home with?
We came home with a bunch of seeds
mm-hmm.
to plant and a sweet potato to plant.
Mm. She's supposed to plant it or germinate it and keep a journal.
Oh, I missed the journal part.
Glad. It's in the email.
I'm glad that he sent an email.
Yes, the den leader sent an email with all the requirements.
Okay, because we did not journal.
Well, you got to keep a journal over a couple weeks, and then also with the germination, like the other seeds, you got to keep track and maybe draw a picture after a month or something like that.
Okay, so we need to start some seeds in a cup, I guess.
Yes, yes.
He gave her a gigantic bag full of wildflower seeds to germinate.
Yes. We get plenty of seeds. And dirt, I noticed.
And dirt. Yes. A bag of dirt. Just, in, you know, gave her everything that she needed. I guess yeah. that in normal times, this would probably have been
an activity
in which the cubs were, like, planting the seeds, like, all together.
I did this with my tigers when we did that, at the time. Yeah.
It was fun. I mean, I feel bad that, like, everybody else obviously had been there, and, like,
it was a thing that everyone
it's a thing
does.
That everybody in town does. And clearly the family is a part of the community. Like, they were talking about one of her kids was playing in a ball game with somebody else's kids.
Right.
So we not doing sports are kind of out of the loop on terms of.
We're not doing public school. We're not doing sports. We're pretty much we're like the only thing we are in the loop on in this town is scouts.
Yeah.
Yeah. So.
Oh well.
Which is at least something.
Right.
So that was Friday afternoon, and so on Sunday I had
Saturday.
Saturday. That's what I meant to say.
Today's Sunday.
Yes. So Saturday I had. The scouts, my den, the Weeblos here. So that's Anthony's den. And we've just started working on this year. So they're all Weeblos now. And we started working on their first, I can never remember their badge, advancement ship, you know, the whole thing. This one is on cooking. So it's called Cast Iron Chef. And we started with a Zoom meeting last week or a couple weeks ago. And then we had to figure out how were we going to do this. So we decided to have this in our backyard. I wasn't sure whether this would work or not, but we We did. And it wasn't the whole den. There were several kids missing. Three kids were missing. They had other commitments or something. And so there were three other boys, plus Anthony and parents, and then our kids all hanging around. And so I set up the yard with different cooking stations. So I had my grill going, so charcoal grill. I had the camp stove, the propane camp stove. And then I had the fire bowl so we could I could teach them how to make a fire. I'll go to that in a second. Then we also went over food safety and cleaning. We'd already gone over food safety before, but cleaning. So the three basin method. So you have a basin of warm soapy water, a basin of warm just plain water, and then a basin of a sanitizing basin for with warm water with a cap full of bleach. So soapy water, rinse water, and then sanitizing water. And so we went over that. And then the kids and their parents brought some stuff to cook. So one brought corn on the cob wrapped in foil with butter and salt and pepper. Another one brought wings. So the wings was his recipe. So he came up with it with his dad.
The cub did?
Yes. And so I grilled those for him. And then one of the other weevilos, they brought the potatoes, like baked potatoes wrapped in foil, throw them right in the coals in the fire, which is always fun. And then Anthony's was s'mores. So we had, marshmallow. Everyone knows what a s'more is.
Yes.
Roasting
marshmallows on sticks over fire.
Right.
Always, always a popular activity.
Oh, yes. I can burn things and then I can eat sweet, sugary things. Yes. I mean, that's the ideal boy thing.
It looked like a very successful meeting. It looked like all the kids were enjoying the food greatly and having a fun time doing it.
They all ate some. They all enjoyed it. They all liked it. I think the parents enjoyed themselves as well. We did the best we could with the masking and the distancing. We tried to abide by the rules. Making sure kids keep their mask on is so hard. I mean, how old is Anthony? What, nine?
Nine.
So they're all about nine, all these boys. And just getting them to, like, our kids were, like, Ben and Lucy and Bella and Anthony were all pretty good about with their masks. But the other kids, I mean, they go to school, they're at sports, they do whatever. But even just they throw them all together, they're all running around. And there's three other boys and Anthony. And it just is hard for them to keep their masks on. It's just, it's tough, and what are you going to do? I mean, you just got to hope for the best. It's just the way it is. Otherwise we'd never leave the house and we'd never do anything. So, it worked out. We got to figure out what we're doing. So I've decided, and the parents and I have decided we're going to do one Zoom meeting a month and one in-person socially distanced meeting a month. So, because we would normally have two meetings a month in person in normal times. So we probably got one or two more opportunities to be together outdoors before the weather forces us inside. So October, November.
Right.
But once December and January hit, I don't know, like January, February, December, January, February, and March, even March. Well, no, we did the hike in March this year. So March can be okay. So we got to figure something out for those months. But
we could do a snow hike.
Well, yeah. We need to be working on our advancement. So the next one, we are going to do a hike, our next gathering. So we got to figure out where we want to do it. We could go back to Punkabog Pond because that seemed popular with the Weeblos, but we could try someplace else too. I don't necessarily want to just do the same hike every time.
Right.
So we'll see
explore new places.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, there's lots of places to hike. I mean, there's the rest of the Blue Hills, there's tons of hiking paths over there. We could even hike to the top. It would be fun. The Blue Hill itself, but, yeah, so We'll try to get a hike in October. I think that would be the thing. But we've got some other stuff we've got to get done. We'll see how it goes, and then tomorrow, as we record this, looks like Ben is going to go to his first Boy Scout meeting.
Yep,
which should be good. We'll be he's really looking forward to doing it. He's excited about doing it, so I'm excited for him. And then. Looks like the girls, we weren't able to have the girls scout meeting, the girls' troop, together this week because of...
sickness or something?
No, it was the paperwork for the approval for us to be indoors, for the girls to be indoors at the church that's the charter, at the Avon Baptist Church.
Uh-huh.
So they had to go through the approval process with their board.
With the church's board?
Yeah. Board of Deacons? Something like that. I forget what the authority of the Baptist, of the local Baptist church is, but... called, but it's whatever their board is, needs to approve our plan for using their space.
Right.
They're the chartering organization, so they control all that. We can get back into the place where the Cub Scouts are, so that's the local Episcopal Church, soon, apparently, but there's all these restrictions, but you have to do a deep clean after you've used it, you know, of the bathrooms and stuff, so we'll see how it goes. You know, it's hard to deny the kids the opportunity to do things like scouts, all the scout stuff. That's so good for them.
Right.
You know, and that they missed out on.
The whole spring with no scouts was really tough.
Yes. They missed out on so much. And I know the organization, the national organization, is struggling in the bad sense, but it's just struggling to figure out how to give kids the experiences without, you know, while keeping them safe. And I get that. I mean, they want to make sure that they're keeping kids safe. But also, you know, I mean, can you imagine if you're a 17 or 18 year old? They've extended the deadline for the older kids to get Eagle. Because I can't imagine being a 17 or 18 year old and like, well, I guess I did all that work for nothing because now I can't make my Eagle. You know,
that would be really disappointing.
That would be terrible. So they've extended the deadlines. They've made accommodations. All right. You know, certain requirements have been sort of modified or suspended or that sort of thing. But we're doing our best. You know, I think the kids are still having fun, and that's what's important. So let's talk a little bit. We talked about having the people over. Let's talk about something that we've been cooking, which is we had... we've had more soups this week, several.
We had a spell of cool weather this week, like a snap of burr chilly grab a jacket weather, though today and yesterday we're back to warm.
Yeah, it's warmed up again. It's, you know, fall summer, like Tuesday's supposed to be 80, muggy.
Ugh. I was kind of liking the fall weather.
Yeah, well, that's what fall is like. It's sort of off and on again. But, soups.
Yes. Soup has been on the menu.
So several ones we've had before, but you made a cheese broccoli potato soup.
Yeah, I kind of wanted, you know, I love potato soup and I love broccoli soup and I really couldn't decide. I was just having one of those indecisive moments and then I just sort of had the why not both moment. And so it was a potato broccoli soup. I had some leftover broccoli and I basically made it just a potato soup, like, you know, carrots, celery, onion, and then threw some, you know, sauteed those and threw some potatoes in there with some broth and seasonings. I didn't even remember what I did. And then, I threw the broccoli in at the very end.
Was it leftover broccoli?
Yeah, it was like a steamed broccoli from the night before.
Mm, yeah, steamed fresh broccoli. Wasn't frozen. Wasn't the frozen stuff.
Yeah. And I thought the soup came out really nice. I put a lot of cream in it. Like, I think I put like a pint of heavy cream in it.
what soup isn't great with a pint of heavy cream?
Right. And, you know, I had some white wine and some homemade chicken stock. So it was a lot of flavor. And a whole bunch of potatoes.
It was good. It was good. And it was good the next day. How did the kids like it?
As I recall, some of them liked it and some of them opted to go make something different.
Lucy, you set aside some for Lucy that didn't have cheese or cream in it. And you set aside a pretty good sized bowl for her.
She slurped down a whole bunch of that, like a big tureen worth.
She had a whole bunch of it. It was good.
And I think Anthony really only liked the garlic croutons. And so basically he ate as much soup as he could. Like, get away with putting garlic croutons in.
Because I wouldn't let him eat the croutons out of the bowl.
When we cut him off from the croutons, then he was done with the soup. I'm pretty sure Ben didn't like the soup. I think Bella and Sophie both thought it was okay.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure Sophie had more than one bowl of it.
She usually has more than one bowl of everything.
Even when it's just okay.
She's
growing.
She is definitely growth spurting.
I was looking at a photo of Sophie from a year ago, and I'm like, who's that little girl? Like, she is grown.
I swear it's like 6 inches.
Yeah. She's like this huge person now. It's wild.
Yeah.
It's
fun.
And then other thing, we really haven't done anything new or interesting. We've made Asian noodle soup, which is one of our standbys, and we made another minestrone type tomato vegetable soup with leftover chicken.
It was leftover soup.
Leftover soup is really good. I'm telling you, you take some chicken broth that you've made and you've put in the freezer, and you add like leftover fresh veggies and maybe some, you know, leftover chicken from the skewer. And that's really good. So there's nothing, no knock on that. Throw in a can of tomatoes. Yeah. Well, the secret is using homemade chicken stock in the Instant Pot.
Right. I think this was in one of the things of soup. It was like I made some more broth and one I had some leftover in the freezer.
Yeah. Well, then you throw in the secret power, the flavor pack, which is the leftover drippings from when you make the chicken thighs?
No, I didn't actually do that.
Oh, we still have that in there. Yeah. You made some really good vegetables with dinner tonight.
Those were fresh turnips.
Fresh turnips and carrots from the market?
And carrots from the farmer's market.
And you cooked them in?
It was like some butter, like a couple tablespoons of butter and a little bit of olive oil. And then, some of the chicken drippings from...
Chicken drippings and the chicken schmaltz?
There might have been a little bit of that in there.
Okay, well, but most of the chicken drippings.
Yeah.
I mean, that adds so, like, it's like a flavor punch in the face. That is like, boom, so good. Almost as good as, and maybe just as good as the vegetables from the pot roast.
That was the other thing I did this week, is pot roast.
We had a pot roast.
Oh, and Isabella made an apple pie, her first time making apple pie.
Wait, she's never made apple pie before?
She made blueberry pie.
Oh, I thought she made an apple pie before. Okay. But yeah, it was a beautiful apple pie.
It was gorgeous. This was picture perfect, like picture from the cookbook perfect apple pie.
I was very much impressed.
We did use the frozen crust, but not the one that comes in the like pie plate, but like you buy it like, oh, it's like rolled up in the freezer section.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's
Pillsbury brand.
Right. Right. So that was really good. I'm just writing down. I have to keep track so that we don't talk about the same thing over and over again in episodes because neither of us can remember. So if I don't write it down, we'll probably bore you. We're talking about the same thing again. And we've probably done that with the stuff I forgot to write down. We had the pot roast. The Instant Pot pot roast is really good. If you have an Instant Pot, try it. It's so easy and comes out so well. So you brown it, the roast in the Instant Pot, and then liquid veggies.
If you're really tight on time, you can skip the browning, but the browning really adds so much flavor.
Yeah. Liquid. What do you use for liquid?
See, I think I used like a cup or two of red wine and a little bit of soy sauce and Worcestershire sauce. And I think if they threw in some herbs like thyme and some bay leaves, some garlic and onion and carrot.
Yes.
So what I do with, I throw in some of the vegetables, like the garlic and the onion and the carrot, when I put in the roast. And so they kind of make the broth. And then I pull out the roast after it's cooked and soft. I take the roast out. And then I throw in some potatoes and carrots and cook them just for like 3 or 4 minutes.
Top off, just in the, like on the saute setting?
You
put the top back on under pressure?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't
just
know that.
The pressure for like 3 minutes. And then, so those are done like in the broth. And then I take those out and I put the broth on the saute setting to boil it down into
okay,
make
that's
a thick
what I saw.
Gravy.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Yeah, yeah. It thickens up a bit. I mean, if we didn't have the flour allergy, you could throw a little flour in there and really thicken it up to like a real gravy.
Yeah, I was being really lazy with the gravy.
Well, I mean, yeah. Or you could use arrowroot. That would have thickened it up a little bit too. But
was too lazy. It was late, and I was too lazy to thicken it up.
It's not lazy. It's just time. That was a good. That was another good one. So that's what we've been eating, and hopefully we'll have something interesting this coming week as well. We'll have to see what's on the menu. I really want to pull out some of my other fall recipes and see what we can find there. If this were like a few years ago, we made when we went apple picking, we came back, and you don't remember this at all.
I have no memory.
I have a photo here I'm going to show you after, because it came up in my like photo memories. But it's chicken and apples and potatoes in a honey mustard sauce.
I have a sneaking suspicion that this is one of those, like, you really liked it and I was like, meh.
I'm sure you were meh on it. Yeah.
I'm not a huge honey mustard fan.
I remember you being meh. So that would explain it. Yes. But you know, if that's the sort of thing, I think somebody might like that.
Right.
So let's move on to talking about what we've been reading and watching. So I watched a documentary on Netflix called The Social Dilemma. A lot of people have been talking about it, and so I figured, you know, I'd give it a watch. And it's a documentary that features a lot of people who used to work at, I don't think anybody still works at, but used to work at the big social networks. And I mean, not just like low-level, entry-level, you know, drones, but like senior VPs and director of this and that sort of thing. The guy who was the former director of monetization at Facebook, who then went on to be the president of Pinterest, and you know, people with big time jobs at these. The guy who invented the like button on Facebook.
It's kind of weird to think that there was somebody who like came up with that. Like, I am responsible for the like button.
Yeah, I mean, when you think about it, like, what was there before? Nothing. Like, there was no, there was a, hey, we should have a thing where people could say, just say like, instead of having to type, I like that. So, but the gist of it is how social networks are, I mean, there was nothing astoundingly new about it. Like, nothing I didn't already know, which is the social networks, including Facebook and Twitter and Google, and even like things like YouTube and Google's Gmail and other and Google search, they're all manipulating us in certain ways to change our behavior in a way that is profitable. And I don't mean that in a nefarious way, but I mean in the way that
They're companies that have a bottom line. They're making money.
We're not the customers because we're not paying the money. We all know that. If you're not the one spending the money, you're not the customer. You're the product. And it was the same way with broadcast television. It's the same way with the social networking. But the difference is they know much more about you as an individual than the TV networks did. All the TV networks knew is a bunch of people that they're watching, and so we broadcast ads at them. With this, they know exactly who you are, your taste, and they know everything that you're doing. They know how long you're pausing to look at a picture as you scroll by. They know how long you watch a video. They know what kinds of things you watch. They know what kind of, and what that gives them is the ability to say, well, let's give them a little more of this, and this will keep them longer, and they'll keep scrolling and scrolling and, you know, give them the promise of more. And psychologically, if you do this, this keeps them their attention that much longer, and so on and so forth. And so then they illustrate it with this sort of dramatic narrative of a family that's in the midst of it. You have a high school son, you have a college age daughter, I guess, and you have a middle school daughter and the two parents. And it shows how mostly the kids, but a little bit the mom too, how they're affected by social media and the different things that result, and how they're being manipulated by the system. The dramatizations were a little cheesy, a little bit over the top, because one of the things they want to emphasize is that it's not about like there's individuals sitting there watching your behavior, but there's
it's like all algorithms.
It's all automated. And it's not like we want to harm people. But the harm may be unintentional. Like, it might be harming us, but it's not intentional. And one of the things that really struck me...
sort of unintended consequences.
Yes. And one of the things that struck me about this was the people, these people who invented all this, saying things like, I'd come home from work, and instead of, you know, playing with my kids, I'd be in my email, or I'd be scrolling my newsfeed. Like, they would be succumbing to the same behaviors that they were creating for other people to do. Like, they had themselves succumbed to their own tricks and tools of the trade. And that's why these people left, you know, almost everyone they interviewed are people who left and are now trying to get the word out about, not that it's evil. And not, I don't think anybody in there, well, there's one guy who you might've seen online, this one guy who's famous for being like, you know, get rid of all social media and all this stuff. But most people are like, we're not saying that social media is evil, but we're saying that it needs to be rejiggered to be for good and less evil, the unintentional evil that it is. So I would definitely recommend that anyone watch this. You should definitely watch The Social Dilemma. One thing, and we're going to be talking about it on the Secrets of Technology, which is another podcast that I do on the SQPN network. And we're going to have a special panel discussion this week where almost all of the different people who do the show, we're all going to get together and we're going to talk about this because we've been talking about issues related to this for a while. So if you go to if you look for Secrets of Technology on your podcast directory, you should be able to find it there. It's, you know, you'll see the SQPN logo when you find the right one. So one of the things I want to point out, though, which I thought was very interesting, it's on Netflix. The name Netflix. Netflix uses the same recommendation algorithms, the same tricks and tools to get you to keep watch the next thing, to keep you hooked, mm-hmm. the recommendation engine, all that stuff. Netflix isn't mentioned once in the entire documentary. All the others are.
Don't look too closely at the man behind the curtain.
Right. Now, take that for what you will. I don't think it invalidates or undermines the basic message of the documentary, but it's something to keep in mind. So just saying.
Interesting.
Yeah. So that's what I was, I watched this week. And then I also finished another book, a new book that I've been waiting to come out for a bit, Vince Flynn's Total Power. So it's in the Mitch Rapp series. So Vince Flynn is an author. It's a military spy thriller. This character, Mitch Rapp, is a black ops special agent for the CIA, et cetera, et cetera. Does the dirty work, et cetera. And Vince Flynn, the author, actually died a few years ago. And so this new author, Kyle Mills, has picked up the baton and is continuing the character with the aid and approval of Vince's his widow, his family. So it's interesting to see them continue it. So this book was about, it's interesting to see how the military spy thriller genre has shifted over the last several decades. The, mm-hmm. the enemy used to be, you know, the Soviets.
And then the Cold War ended.
Then it was
terrorism.
Then it was mostly terrorism because 92, when the first World Trade Center bombing occurred, you kind of turned attention to terrorism because the Soviets were gone. So there was terrorism. Then in the 2010s, after like around the time that Bin Laden died and sort of things started petering out there, the attention started to turn to China and North Korea. So mm-hmm. so a lot of the books were about China and North Korea and hacking and that sort of stuff. Well, this one, I think now it's all about the apocalyptic end of civilization.
Great.
So this one was about someone hacking the American power grid, turning it off to such a degree that it would be out for a year. So America without any power for a year, which would basically result in 90% 90% of Americans
this,
would die.
This sounds like S.M. Sterling's Dies the Fire.
Yes, it does. I mean, it was an interesting book. It was hard to. It felt like it was falling outside the usual military spy thriller genre, veering into sci-fi a little bit.
A little more post-apocalyptic sort of stuff.
It wasn't really what I was looking for, especially in 2020. Frankly, I've got enough apocalyptic in my regular day-to-day.
This sounds like a book I might have skipped.
Yeah, I know. I like the character and some of the bits of it were interesting. But I found myself kind of like pushing through the end because I just wanted to get to the part where he captured the bad guy and fixed things. You know what I mean? Because that's obviously what happens. You know what I mean? That's how the books.
I've had a few books recently where I felt like I was just trying to get through to the end to find out what happened.
Right. And as I finished it, I was like, oh, time to go back to reading Harry Dresden, the next Harry Dresden novel. I mean, there's some other, like, fall, now that fall's here, there's a bunch of new books coming out. Naomi Novik has a new book coming out this week, I think.
Ooh, wow.
Yes, that'll be fun. Called Deadly Education. And I think it's a new series for her. She's been doing a bunch of one-offs, but she's gotten really, like, ever since the Temeraire series, which I really enjoyed.
Wasn't that, that was her first?
That was her first series, yep.
Yeah.
And I really enjoyed it, but I think she's really matured as an author.
Yeah, I had a hard time getting into that series because the first time I picked up the first book, the timing was really bad. I had just finished reading, like, a Patrick O'Brien novel.
And it's basically Patrick O'Brien with dragons.
But her first novel, it was rough. I mean, some of the actual writing was rough. And Patrick O'Brien is really a master, like, craftsman of the English language. And so I was just like, I cannot read this. So I read, like, two pages of the Naomi Novik book, the first Temeraire book, and I was just...
Yeah.
No way.
And by the
I came back to it like 5 years later and I was fine.
Yeah.
And I binge read the entire series in like a month.
Right. And some of the later books, like it was starting to feel a little spent.
Yeah.
Like some series, they just feel like we should have ended this another like a book or two ago. And you're continuing it on because you love the character so much, the author. And I keep reading it because I love the characters so much and I want to let them go. But we should have let them go.
Yeah, I also felt like she kind of got stuck in, well, the slog of the Napoleonic War is like...
It's the slog of the Napoleonic
War. When Napoleon invades Russia, it's just, things get grim. And that's when the books really got grim.
Got grim, yeah.
I mean, really...
Yeah.
Land wars in Asia. You can't win.
That's right.
Right?
Blunder.
Yeah, it was much better when it was like...
She should have went up against a Sicilian when death was on the line.
Right. The China book was fun.
The China book
and
was fun,
I liked
fun,
the
yeah.
Australian one, and... Yeah. But yeah.
And the journey, a little bit of a journey through Africa. Like, she really did take them around the world.
Right.
But yeah, the Napoleonic stuff did get a little really bogged down a bit. It was grim and a slog. So anyway, but I liked it. I would enjoy it. If you like Patrick O'Brien and you like fantasy novels, this is perfect. It's like the Dragon Riders of Pern meet Master and Commander.
I would add one caveat. There is some adult content.
Yes.
Relationships that are, I would say that.
They're very 21st century in some respects.
Right. Yes. So I would say this is for older teens, not younger teens. So if you've got a teen who's like really excited about dragons, this might not be the series for them. So I would
preview it yourself.
Preview. Yeah.
That's true. That's true.
I like to mention that as a mom because I know sometimes it can be hard to figure out what is good for kids.
Now, I have to say her last two novels, right? Two or three?
Spinning Silver was her most recent one, and before that there was Uprooted.
Yeah, I think there was. I don't think there was one in between them.
I don't think so.
So
if there was, I missed it.
They were really good. Like really, she's herself is Jewish, and she has really kind of delved into like some Russian. Jewish Russian
folklore.
Like that's actually my mom's background. And in really hitting in these areas,
Spinning Silver was a very different take on the Rumpelstiltskin.
Oh yes.
Is Rumpelstiltskin? You spin silver.
Yes.
He spins gold,
but it's the same sort of thing. Yeah.
Right.
Yes. It is it is unique. It is different.
Characters were really good.
The characters were really good. The story was compelling. It was one of the best new fantasy novels
I've
read in a long time. So definitely that. And then Uprooted before it, which is also really good. In fact, she's been getting better and better. That's why I'm really looking forward to this new one called Deadly Education, which should be...
That's a very intriguing title, I have to say.
Yeah. So it was... I'm trying to think of a... you'll find yourself imagining what studying magic in Ursula K. Le Guin's Earthsea really would entail, or what attending Hogwarts must be like for all the kids who aren't Harry Potter. Thoughts like these are the seeds from which stories grow, I'm reading from her website.
Right.
They're where this book started, in the same way that Spinning Silver began between the lines of Rumpelstiltskin and Uprooted came out of a thicket of old Polish stories and songs. Yeah, Uprooted was really came out of Polish folklore. That's right. True. One of the oldest legends of a school for witchcraft and wizardry is the story of the Skullomance, a hidden institution said to be run by the devil himself, where the students are cloistered for years, never seeing the sun while learning the darkest of arts. Ever since I first read about this, this is Naomi Novik's voice. Ever since I first read about this mysterious place in my middle school library, I've been imagining its story. Who are the students in its classrooms, and why would they or their parents accept the price the school exacts?
Interesting.
A Deadly Education is the first volume in a trilogy that presents the answers I've imagined to those questions.
So, like, an interesting take on sort of the Harry Potter.
But
magical school,
it kind of goes in the direction of a magical school because magic exacts a price,
right?
Like Hogwarts was, well, Hogwarts was always presented to us as a good thing. Oh, it's Hogwarts. It's wonderful. Oh, it's a magical place. But there was a very much a dark side to Hogwarts.
There was. And yet. Yeah.
Well, not only is Slytherin allowed the evil club. Which is what Slytherin was.
Right.
But, like, kids died, like, as a matter of course. Like, or their lives were endangered, whether it was playing
Quidditch,
or the Tri-Wizard Tournament, or all these other things. I mean, you had these dangerous monsters in the forest. I mean, Hogwarts was a dark place. And then, never mind the parade of professors of magic and the dark arts.
Defense against the dark arts,
who were bad guys in secret and all this other stuff. It's just, I mean, so this kind of says, okay, well, and then the Dementors, our jailers, are these evil creatures. But so this kind of rips the veil off and says, oh, see, it actually is a really bad place. It's a school run by the devil. So I'm really curious to what this is going to be like. I have no recommendation because I haven't read it, so don't take my word for, like, this is something you should read or not. But, well, I'll definitely let you know once I've read it.
Yeah.
So what have you read this week?
Let's see. I've been reading a lot of juvenile fiction, which is one of those things I love kid lit. And some of it's so good. And a lot of stuff that I didn't stumble upon when I was a kid. And then sometimes it's this nostalgia factor. Anyway, this week I've been reading Rosemary Sutcliffe's Outcast, which is a novel of Roman Britain. The main character in Outcast is the child of a Roman soldier, but he is in a shipwreck as an infant. His entire everybody on the ship, his family, and everyone dies except him, and he washes up on shore, like, in his mother's arms, and a British tribesman finds him as a baby and decides to raise him. But the pagan priest warns him that this is a bad idea to take in one of these Roman babies. They're going to be cursed by the gods, who are not going to be happy with this. But the child grows up, they call him Beric, and he grows up thinking of himself as a member of the tribe and just loving his adoptive family, until then the tribe has one bad drought famine year and they decide that he's the perfect scapegoat. See, we were right. The gods are angry at us for taking in this Roman child, so we've got to kick him out. So here's this teenage kid, young adult, I suppose. He's sort of like right at that edge of teenage young adult, not quite a man, and they kick him out. And so he decides, I guess I'll go be with my people, the Romans, even though I know nothing about them and I don't speak their language. And then he, of course, falls into bad situations. It's a little bit spoilery, but he gets captured by slavers and sent off to Rome as a slave.
Okay.
How he makes his way back to Britain is quite the adventure. Of course, you know he's going to end up back in Britain.
Well, of course.
It was, this one had some dark moments in it. I mean, Sutcliffe does not stay away from the darkness, but this one felt darker than a lot of her novels. And the his experiences as a slave are kind of brutal. So this is one I would definitely like ask more sensitive kids to be a little bit more hesitant with. But I really liked the story a lot. Mm. And
you were saying earlier today that you like Sutcliffe because it's one of those things where it kind of gives you an insight into she does her work in explaining and in figuring out what life was like.
Right. Then. And she has this very interesting sort of overall view of British history, which is in Sutcliffe's historical novels, and she wrote a whole bunch of them. There's this sense of like Britain is this place where you just get wave after wave of invaders. And so all of British history is basically like, oh, here comes a new wave of invaders coming in to push out the people who were here before and sort of make them into an underclass while the newcomers are on top. And it's interesting to watch like one culture succeed, another culture succeed, another culture. She starts off with, you know, in the Bronze Age, where there's already one Bronze Age culture, which has supplanted a Stone Age culture. And then here come the Iron Age invaders and, you know, the people who we know as the Celts, I suppose. And then, of course, you get the Romans and then the Saxons and then the Normans. And I wish I had discovered Sutcliffe as a kid, but I'm certainly enjoying her as an adult. Mm. I'm reading her memoir too, by the way, where she writes about her childhood, which is very interesting. She suffered from rheumatoid arthritis as a childhood. Mm-hmm. And so she was crippled and lived kind of a secluded, reclusive, homeschooled life. But it formed her into the novelist she became. So it was very interesting. So that's been fun. And then I started a new book this week, but I'll talk about that on next week's podcast.
I got to save something for next week.
Right.
So coming up this week, we talked to actually earlier, Bella came into the kitchen and said, when are we going apple picking? And so we've been talking about that. We've kind of been putting that off, but partly because we're busy.
Yeah,
it's just unusually, you know, September's always hard to fit something else in because so much is usually going on.
And yet the really good apples are usually in September.
Well, we've missed the picking of most of the really good apples.
I know
that those are usually a week or two ago. The Honeycrisps are your favorites. I know. Yeah. I think they said the orchard we go to, I think they said Jonah Golds are in. But it's just getting away with all of these appointments and things. And now this week we've actually had a pretty good stretch of weather. This week, rain on Tuesday, rain on Wednesday. So an AM rain on Thursday. Looks like Friday is going to be nice.
Thursdays are off anyway because Bella has online classes on Thursday.
Right, she has a class. So we try to go during the week because weekends are always crazy. And these days, getting, you know, the crowds and all that stuff, you're trying to manage that. So, and I've got recordings most Saturdays, you know, not most Saturdays, but many Saturdays. Jimmy and I will often record Mysterious World on a Saturday. So, that's always tricky. So, yeah, hopefully we'll be able to get out there. Someone online was saying, yes, apple picking. When instead of buying a bag of apples for $5 at the supermarket, we wear warm fall clothes in 88 degree weather to go pick $22 worth of apples. I know it's the experience.
It's the experience. It's not about the apples so much as the experience of look, apples grow on trees and
outdoors, walking through an orchard, and, yeah. Right. Picking an apple and eating it off a tree and the experience of this is where food comes from.
Right. Yes. It's
Insider Donuts.
And you know, I experienced apple picking for the first time in my mid 20s when I first moved to Massachusetts. And
they don't do much apple picking in mid central Texas, right?
We had an apple tree in our backyard when I was about 12, 13, and it even produced a few apples. And there was one tree that was big enough for me to climb in, but I remember peach trees being much more of a thing, but we never went going to a place and picking fruit, like the U-Pick thing, was not really big in Texas.
Or at least with your parents.
Or, yeah, at least not with my parents.
I mean, I didn't do...
We had U-Pick pecans in the backyard.
Well, there you go.
My dad would send us out and say, go get some pecans so we can have some pie. We'd gather a bunch of pecans and my dad would sit there and shell them. And then I'd make pecan pie. That was my sort of... And we had a fig tree in our backyard, too.
I didn't go apple picking till I was an adult either. Like,
really?
Like early 20s at the earliest. Yeah.
I have to say the first time I went apple picking was the first time I had a Honeycrisp apple. And it was like, wait, there are apples that taste like this. It was a revelation.
There weren't before that. I mean,
right.
that had been very early days for Honeycrisp.
I think that might have been like one of the first years that they were selling Honeycrisps back in like 2001, maybe.
Yeah, that had to be very early on. I'm trying to think of when.
Like, and my first cider donut, and I love the whole experience. It's best if you go on a cool day, though.
Yes.
When it's a hot day, it's kind of like a slog through the orchard, and you're like sweating, and it's not quite the magical experience.
There was that one time I went where I was not feeling well that day. Do you remember that one?
Yeah, that was horrible.
Oh, I was dragging my leg. I was going to say something else through that orchard. Like, this is like the baton death march of apple picking. I did not want to be there.
No, that was. I feel
bad for like dragging everybody down, but I was trying to give it my best.
Your best wasn't all that great.
My best was like I ended up in the car. Like it was. Oh, that was the one in Bridgewater, CN Farms.
Yeah.
That was the. Yeah, that's what that was. We have a lot of pictures. I mean, the kids have always gone. That's the thing is
the first time we went as a family, Bella was like a baby in a carrier and we went with all the cousins.
We used to do that. The whole cousin, everybody going.
Yeah.
We haven't done that in a long time.
Well, it was also a thing that like your mom liked to do. And then as her ability to get to out be into, mobile
yeah.
and be get out into the orchard became less than. It became sort of a less of a.
We used to meet up at the place we like now, which is Berlin Orchard in Berlin, Mass, which is owned by a wonderful Catholic family. We talked about them last year when we went, and they actually have a son who's really sick. I think
I think so.
Say a prayer for them, but my family all goes to that. And we went all together, like John likes to organize the big group because they're extroverts. So there would be like 10 families and like Franciscans of the primitive observance in gray robes and bare feet. And, you know, the whole thing, like wandering this and like all the normals, like what is the invasion of the weird big Catholics families? And but it just was so unwieldy trying to manage all that. We're like, we'll just go. If we see people there, we'll see people there. If we don't see people there, we're fine. But like last year, we went during the week, and it was awesome because there was nobody there hardly.
Yeah, that was nice.
That was really nice.
And there was no like massive lines for donuts either.
Oh yeah, like there was because on the weekends they limit like you can only get so many donuts. It's like, but there's 7 of us.
you could get half a dozen donuts.
Yes. Well, luckily Lucy can't eat them, so it's like one donut each. I'm like. If I get back in line, I can get a second donut. Anthony, there were no donuts for you. No, I would never do that. Anyway. So, yeah. Hopefully we can get apple picking and have some sense of normalcy in this fall for them. Because so many other things that we want to do are just not available. So,
yeah.
All right.
So let's
wrap things up there.
Okay.
But the very important bit of business, because we want to take a moment to thank our patrons who make it possible for us to create Raising the Bets, including Melissa L., Michael H., Paula K., Suzanne S., and Adam S. Their generous donations at sqpn.com/give make it possible for us to continue Raising the Bets and all the shows at StarQuest. You can join them by visiting sqpn.com/give. And I mentioned a few weeks ago that we were trying to reach 800 patrons, and when we did, we would give away 16 copies of the logo of the, I'm sorry, Verbum Catholic Bible study software from the Logos company from Faith Life.
Uh-huh.
We not only did we reach 800, we were trying to reach 800 by the end of September. We've reached nearly 900.
Wow.
We have nearly 900 patrons. So grateful to everyone who's supporting the network. You do not understand how happy we are. We have reached the point where we can be somewhat assured that we're going to be continuing on for some time to come, God willing, that the blessings continue and that you all continue supporting us. I really do appreciate it. To show our appreciation, we're going to be having this giveaway very soon. So that's it from us. If you have any feedback on our discussion today, you can let us know by commenting at sqpn.com/bets. That's BETTS. Or the SQPN Facebook page, facebook.com/StarQuestMedia. Or send an email to bets@sqpn.com. And you'll find links from our discussion, especially to all those books and the different things we watched, in our show notes at sqpn.com. This seems ironic to say, but remember to like Raising the Bets on the StarQuest Facebook page at facebook.com/StarQuestMedia. Retweet us on Twitter, where we're at sqpn, and you can leave comments in all of our social media places. Until next time, I'm Dom Bettinelli.
And I'm Melanie Bettinelli.
Thank you for listening to Raising the Bets on StarQuest.